This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio@sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at SportsTalkNet. The Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. It's Friday, June 15th, 2012. I encourage you to send your emails to studio@sportstalknetwork.com. That's S-T-U-D-I-O.
Home Electronics and
sportstalknetwork.com. Got a lot to do today. We're going to start right out in Oklahoma City. And as we kind of thought, the Heat were able to win Game 2. Looking at Games 3, 4, and 5 at home, the Heat, I thought, really had to win Game 2 because I don't think they're beating Oklahoma City three in a row, and they did just that. They jumped out to an 18-2 lead, 27-15 at the end of the first quarter, and a furious late Oklahoma City Thunder run just came up short. Durant hit a three to cut it to two. Oklahoma City actually got the ball back down two, and you've probably seen this play 20 times if you follow this at all by now. Durant got the ball on the baseline, 10 feet from the basket, made a move on LeBron, took a short jumper. He definitely got fouled. The referee couldn't really see it. I don't think it was that he saw it and decided not to call. If you saw Steve Javy on SportsCenter really break it down, the former NBA official is very interesting. He said the ref underneath should have moved a few feet to get a better view, and he didn't, so he never saw LeBron's left arm pushing Durant as Durant went to shoot. I thought it was a foul, and I'm a Miami guy. I don't root for the Heat, but I picked Miami to win the series and the game. But that was the difference. That was 98-96. They then fouled LeBron. He sinks two big free throws. Heat 100, Thunder 96. A very interesting game. A gigantic lead for the Heat. Oklahoma City made a run, as you knew they would. They just came up short. Miami steals home court advantage. Miami won. Thunder won. The Heat win game two. And again, a fascinating game with a lot to talk about. You know, it's amazing to me, Russell Westbrook really being criticized today as not kind of the pure point guard, if you will. But Westbrook was a two-guard in college. He's a two-guard playing the point. He can learn to play the point, and he's learning how to play the point, but he doesn't. Here's an excellent example. We go back to the Knicks and Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin walks in. He's a point guard. Russell Westbrook is not. So he's getting criticized for playing poorly. I don't quite agree with that. What I agree with is what we've talked about all year. Yesterday, Westbrook 10 for 26 for 27 points. Durant 12 for 22 for 32 points. 22 shots for Durant, 26 for Westbrook. Never, never, never. Westbrook should never take more shots than Durant. But he really got hammered a little bit by Magic Johnson, a lot by Stephen A. Smith, but at least Magic has to understand this guy is not a point guard. He's playing the point, and he might eventually become a point guard, but he's just not. He's a two-guard playing the point. 27 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. So if you're going to criticize the point guard for not being a good point guard, he gets 7 assists. That's not bad. But I know what they're saying, and I agree, but Stephen A. Smith called his performance pathetic. That's preposterous. You know, and then he tried to backtrack when he was actually challenged, and he meant pathetic from a point guard perspective. But again, Westbrook is maybe, I think Dwayne Wade said he was the most athletic guy in the NBA. That may be true. If you watch the moves he made yesterday, the follow dunk when Durant missed, I mean, these are unbelievable athletic plays. So Westbrook certainly has star talent, but as we discussed, if he plays great, I think they win. If he doesn't, I think they can lose. I thought he played great in the first game. I thought he played okay in the second game. He was not pathetic. I mean, that's absurd. And yes, it's not about numbers, but this guy brought them back into the game. He and Durant. Cephalosha now had his problems. It worked in game one. But obviously the change for Miami was to post up LeBron, have LeBron overpower him down low, and that's just what he did. Cephalosha's offense also suffered. Not that he's a great offensive player, but he has contributed 19 points one game in the last series, 9 points in game one, only 1 for 5 yesterday for 3 points. So Cephalosha can't deal with James down low. We'll have to see if Oklahoma City makes an adjustment now. Harden was much better, 21 points, 4 rebounds, 7 for 11 from the floor. So the big three got off for Oklahoma City, and they still lost the game. For Miami, LeBron, 10 for 22 from the field, 32 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. LeBron was LeBron, hit a big bank shot late, hit 2 foul shots late. Everyone says his critics should leave town now, but I don't think so. And look, I'm picking Miami to win the series. I'm picking Miami to win 2 out of 3 in Miami and picking Miami to win Game 6 in Oklahoma City. But LeBron, if he really wants to get rid of the critics, he has to A, win an NBA championship, and B, hit a big jumper late in the game to win a game. And he does not do that. So, look, you're up 2. You go to the foul line for 2 foul shots. You're 10 for 10 already from the foul line. You make both. Those are clutch. Puts the game out of reach, which it did. But that's not the same as sticking a game-winning jumper when you're down 1 also. Don't give me this tied stuff either. So LeBron still has some things to prove, but he's been awesome. 32 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Dwayne Wade got a better start, 10 for 20, 24 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Battier was unbelievable again, 5 for 7 from 3, 6 for 8 from the floor, 17 points. Bosch was a monster on the boards. Finally, Spoelstra realized, I think, maybe somebody told him, you know, you got to start Bosch. He starts, he plays 40 minutes, he goes 6 for 13 from the floor, 16 points, more importantly, 15 rebounds, 2 blocks. He was very good. So they had the big three for Miami, plus that fourth guy that we've talked about all year. Will it be Battier? Will it be Chalmers? Will it be James Jones? Will it be Mike Miller? Well, yesterday, again, it was Battier, 5 for 7 from 3. That opens it up for the slashers, James and Wade. James went to the basket a lot yesterday. By stepping out and hitting jumpers, which is why he was in the starting lineup, that opens it up for James and Wade. And if you can open it up for James and Wade, Miami's going to be very, very, very tough to beat. But again, big debate in New York yesterday. Can Miami win 3 in a row in Miami? I don't think so. You know, other people say, oh, why not? What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is it's going to be hard for either of these teams to beat each other 3 times in a row. They're just very close, and they're very talented. So Miami gets the win, 100-96. Series tied at 1. You can say, if you want, the advantage goes to Miami. But again, I think the 2-3-2 kills Miami. I don't think that if it was 2-2-1-1-1, I'd say big advantage to Miami. But I don't know that they can win 3 in a row. I don't think Oklahoma can beat Miami 3 in a row. I don't think Miami can beat Oklahoma 3 in a row. But it is 1-1. Another big factor for Oklahoma City, Serge Ibaka had a big game with 5 blocks. Only 4 rebounds, only 7 points, but 5 blocks. He was very big inside. But it wasn't quite enough. And clearly getting down so much early. Now, look, if it was 12-4 instead of 18-2, would Oklahoma City have won? Well, maybe, but you can't really look at a game like that. The reality is they made a huge run. They came back. They stole the ball. Westbrook hit Durant for that big three. They were down 2. They had the ball again. And Durant made that move inside. It was very interesting. You didn't hear anybody say that. But if you watch the replay, look at LeBron James. He overplayed Durant away from the baseline, which is not what you do. He clearly looked over his shoulder for help when Durant got the ball. So Durant actually had the advantage when he caught the ball because LeBron was literally looking for help, and none of it came. So LeBron did the best he could do. Again, he gave him a little push hit with his left arm, but Durant was screening the official from LeBron's foul of Durant. Durant took an awkward shot, I think, as a result of the foul. And again, I'm picking Miami in that game and in the series. There should have been a whistle there. He should have got 2 shots. It could have been a different game and a different series. And if Miami does come back to win all the Oklahoma City guys are going to go, well, remember that foul in game 2 that wasn't called? And they're right. That was a foul. I don't think it was a LeBron's a super-duper star and Durant's just a superstar. I think it was, as Steve Javy showed you on ESPN, he didn't see the foul. The ref didn't see the foul. He was a little out of position to see the foul. So they'll be talking about that one in Oklahoma City for a long time if the Heat come back and win the series after they tie it up 1-1 yesterday. Heat 100, Thunder 96. The other big story, now it moves to Miami for 3 games in Miami. The other big story, of course, the U.S. Open, the golf major that now a lot of people are jumping back on the Tiger Woods bandwagon. I'm certainly not one of them, but he played really well yesterday, shot a 1-under-69, which doesn't sound fantastic, but given what happened to others and all the players in general, only six people were under par. Michael Thompson leads with a 4-under-66. Tiger Woods played very well. Rick Riley got on ESPN and said, oh, if Tiger drives like he drove yesterday, he's going to win this thing. You can feel it here. I don't buy any of that. I'll have to see it first because Tiger Woods is going to have to show in a major down the stretch he can be Tiger Woods. And I still think he's not going to recreate his mindset of those great years that he had, even if he had them for strange reasons in terms of, as we've talked about in the past on this show, a girl in every port, living on the edge, the adrenaline always pumping. I don't think he can duplicate that lifestyle. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, he's still five away from Jack Nicklaus. I don't think he's getting there. Others do. They think he's back. He has won two tournaments this year. He did play well yesterday. He's still three shots off the lead. There are a bunch of other guys tied at one under. Michael Thompson has the lead. Tiger one under. Rose, McDowell, Watney, Toms, all one under. Those are the only six guys under par, which is pretty amazing. In fact, there were twice as many guys 80 or over as there were guys 69 and under. So that gives you a sense. This will too. Phil Mickelson, 6 over 76. Bubba Watson, 8 over 78. I mean, those are horrid scores, obviously. This is at the lake course at the Olympic Club in right outside of San Francisco. And again, the U.S. Open course always plays tough. This is no exception. Nick Watney, though, had the third double eagle ever in the history of the U.S. Open. And if you saw that shot, obviously a par five, his second shot, he holed it out. I think it was from like 160 yards. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And frankly, that's why Watney is one under. So he had to double eagle to get minus one. But good for him, it was a fantastic shot. Now Mickelson and Bubba Watson, obviously, all they're focusing on is making the cut. Mickelson had to re-tee his first shot, so he got off very bad. He went bogey, bogey, bogey. For him to re-tee and get a bogey is actually pretty good, as you know. But to go bogey, 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 it's the first time in Mickelson's career he's ever opened a tournament with three majors. So that was a big problem for him. And if you saw him afterwards, if you saw the interview, he obviously was shaken. But again, you have a different mindset now. You're not trying to win the tournament today. He's trying to make the cut today and then see, will the field come back to him? Again, only one guy who's below one under. So if Thompson has a bad round, you might have a leader one under, two under, even par at the cut at the end of today. But Mickelson obviously has to do better. Bubba Watson at 8 over 78, he may not be able to make the cut, but the cut is going to be plus, obviously, with only six guys who are below par. So a lot of interesting dynamics. They asked Michael Thompson, oh, are you concerned that the coverage is really just for Tiger Woods and that Tiger rules the day? And he said, not at all. I'd rather they focus on Tiger rather than me. Although Michael Thompson, the confident guy, said, if I continue to putt the way I putted today in the first round, I will be there at the end. So, you know, these guys are all in a tough bind. Tiger's Tiger. He hasn't really been good for 3 years now. He's coming back. He gets all the attention. I think on the one hand, these players don't mind having the cameras not on them. But on the other hand, they're like, well, hold it now. I'm the leader. This guy's three shots behind me, and he's getting all the play, all the publicity, all the interviews, all the credit. But I think deep down that's okay with Michael Thompson. He doesn't want to focus on that, and he doesn't want people to focus on him, I think, generally speaking. This is a major, so obviously there's a ton more media than usual. But after one, Michael Thompson, four under, Tiger Woods, and four others, one under, Bubba Watson and Mickelson, who both played with Tiger, by the way. So think about that. Tiger was one under, while two stars, Bubba Watson and Phil Mickelson, were a combined 14 under. I mean, that's pretty tough. So it gives you a sense of how tough it was and how good Tiger Woods was to beat par. And, of course, afterwards, everybody seemed to think Tiger could have been even better than one under par. But You know, it's like Bill Parcells in football. You are what your record is. Well, in golf, you are what you shoot. So, yeah, it was one under, and maybe you could have been two under or three under. But to me, that's all irrelevant. And again, I'm not a guy who's picking Tiger in the U.S. Open. I'm not a guy who thinks Tiger's back. I'm not a guy who thinks Tiger's going to reel off a bunch of majors now. Again, it all remains to be seen if he can come back. He's obviously playing better. He did win Arnie Palmer's tournament. He did win Jack Nicklaus's tournament. He is going the right way. Obviously, he's in major contention here. I think deep down, nobody really thinks Michael Thompson is going to continue to play like he played yesterday. 66 is an unbelievable round at the U.S. Open. So unbelievable, nobody but Michael Thompson shot better than 69. So you have a sense just from that how difficult the course played yesterday. And according to Andy North, two-time U.S. Open champ, it's going to be very difficult today. The way the pins are set, et cetera, it's going to be very, very hard for these guys to really score. Mickelson said yesterday, I have to shoot around in the 60s. And normally that's not a really difficult thing for a great golfer like Mickelson. But again, the way this course is playing, the way this tournament is, the pressure of a major, if you shoot 69, that's a major, major accomplishment. And I think Mickelson's right. What he's saying is if I shoot 69, I'll be plus five. That should be good enough to make the cut, or I hope it's good enough to make the cut. This is the Steve Kallis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-603-8308. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308.
Follow SportsTalkNetwork.com on Twitter at SportsTalkNET.
Oh my God.
Shut the front door.
And now like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/SportsTalkNetwork. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion.
Listen, if you're considering buying hardwood flooring, don't do anything until you've written down this number and received your free Lumber Liquidators catalog.
The flooring was high quality with an unbeatable price tag.
Call in the next 10 minutes to get your free catalog.
What I bought at Lumber Liquidators is a vastly higher quality than flooring I had installed 6 years ago, and for a fraction of the cost.
So if you want great hardwood flooring at unbeatable prices, trust Lumber Liquidators. We buy direct from the mills. Call right now to get our flooring guide and catalog absolutely free. It's filled with top quality hardwood flooring, including solid hardwoods, laminates, and bamboos, and even Bellawood prefinished flooring with a 100-year transferable warranty. The same floor Bob Vila has in his home. This free catalog is full of tips, ideas, and our flooring project list to make your buying decisions easy. Hurry, call right now to get a copy of this free guide and catalog. Call 877-407-9413 to get your free copy now. 877-407-9413. 877-407-9413.
This is a referral service. Calls will be routed to an independent referral insurance agency.
Listen up, America!
Listen up, America. I'm talking to anyone with or without a pre-existing medical condition. A health insurance hotline has now been established to provide health insurance for all Americans, even uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote on affordable health plans available to you. 1-800-690-6110. I repeat, this is a hotline providing free quotes for affordable health plans. It's for anyone without health insurance, even if you have pre-existing conditions. Medical costs are the number one cause of bankruptcy and financial distress. All uninsured Americans are strongly urged to call this National Health Insurance Hotline right away to protect yourself and your family from an unexpected variety of medical costs that could cause financial hardship. Call the Health Insurance Hotline right now for a free quote at 1-800-690-6110. That's 1-800-690-6110. Call 1-800-690-6110.
Radio with Frank Reese. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back on the Steve Callis Show. We're going to get to the baseball in a minute. I just want to talk about baseball, but not the scores. I just want to talk about the rash of no-hitters, including two perfect games. Matt Cain the other night with a perfect game. Very interesting article in USA Today today. Leo Mazzoni, the old pitching coach from the Braves, when the Braves were the Braves, and you know what I mean, if you follow them in the 90s through the early 2000s with Maddox and Smoltz and Glavine, before that Steve Avery, they had a tremendous pitching staff in Mazzoni, who is now retired, but he had some very strong statements to talk about if that pitching staff had pitched, not in the steroids era, which is when they did pitch, but in today's era, he said they'd never give up a run, not one. Of course, that's a bit of an exaggeration. They'd pitch a no-hitter a week. Of course, that's a bit of an exaggeration. But it is a very interesting thing that's happened. It is partly post-steroids era. It's also the lack of doing something that's the hardest thing to do in sports and always has been, the ability to hit a round ball with a baseball bat. It's a very interesting article by Bob Nightingale. I encourage you. I think you can get it online. I know I saw it in the USA Today, the newspaper today. But this leads to a lot of other things. And as a side note, the Mets are appealing, if you saw the R.A. Dickey one-hitter, and I just happened to be watching it live because it was Price against Dickey. Dickey should be the All-Star. He should have clinched being the All-Star starter the other day unless he falls off a cliff now. He's been unbelievable throwing that hard knuckleball. He's reinvented himself. But it was early in the game. I think it was the first inning. B.J. Upton gets up, hits a slow roller, no later than the second inning. Slow roller down the third baseline. David Wright comes in, tries to barehand it, can't pick it up. Definitely a hit. Definitely a hit. The only question at the time was, should he have caught it backhanded with his glove? Could he have got the speedy Upton? And I really wanted to see a camera on Upton, which presumably there wasn't one, to see if he was busting it down the line. Because sometimes B.J. Upton has been accused of dogging it. I watch Tampa Bay a lot, but I don't watch every game. But I would think Upton, slow roller down the third baseline, knows he can fly, knows he has a good chance for a hit. This wasn't like a fly ball to second or a hard one-hopper back to the pitcher. This was one he could have beat out. I have a sense he was busting it down the line. And you can't say for sure whether Wright would have gotten him, but Wright would have had a play. It would have been bang-bang at first. So the question really was that an error, is not was that an error or a hit. It was definitely a hit the way it was played. Guy comes in, tries to barehanded. You got a fast runner. It's going to be bang-bang even if you pick it up. So that's got to be a hit. But the Mets are appealing because they want R.A. Dickey to get a no-hitter. You know they got their first no-hitter in 8,020 regular season games with Johan Santana earlier this season. And taking nothing away from Santana, you know the Beltran line drive down the third baseline absolutely hit the foul line. That should have been a hit, of course. But now, to Dickey's credit, and R.A. Dickey, I don't know if you've heard him speak, very bright guy, very thoughtful guy, has a book out talking about the physical abuse and mental abuse he suffered as a child, but a very interesting guy. And he could probably pitch like this for at least another 5 years. But Dickey, to his credit, says, I don't even want the no-hitter that way. There'll be an asterisk next to that no-hitter. I don't really want it. So the Mets are trying to do right, I don't know, by their pitcher, by their franchise, but the pitcher who pitched it says, I don't want it. And the interesting dynamic there to me is, if that's not a hit in the first inning or the second inning, I'm pretty sure it was the first, if that's not a hit, then you have the pressure of throwing a no-hitter in the sixth inning, the seventh inning, the eighth inning, the ninth inning. The way this game was, Dickey had given up a hit. The Mets wound up winning the game 9-1. Dickey gave up an unearned run late in the game. Not a hit, no hit. And you don't have that pressure. You know what the pressure is. You can see it. If you tuned into Cain's perfect game, I just happened to catch the last two innings on MLB Network. You know, once the word gets out, as it does nowadays, that a guy's pitching a perfect game, you can turn on the TV and watch it. But there was not that pressure. And it's incredible pressure of, I got to get 9 outs, I got to get 6 outs, I got to get 3 outs. There was none of that during Dickey's game. So to give him a no-hitter after the fact on a play the way it was played, which was clearly a hit, would be a travesty. And to R.A. Dickey's credit, he totally understands that, and good for him. Back to Mazzoni just quickly one more time. It's very interesting. He really did go over the top. But when you think about what Smoltz, Glavin, Avery early on, Maddox, of course, the best control pitcher ever, in my opinion, think about what they would do today. I think that's a very good point. The other interesting point is there were two perfect games pitched in 2010. There were two perfect games pitched this year already in 2012. And, oh, by the way, we're in mid-June. The last time two perfect games were pitched in the same year before that, 1880. So, and as you know, the Mets never had a no-hitter for their first 51 years. Now they have one, and they might have two if they win this appeal. I don't think there's any way they're going to win this appeal. But one other stat from that. Pitchers are striking at batters 7.5 times per game per nine innings. If that stands up, it'll be the highest rate in MLB history. So it's a combination of things. No steroids. Some people say no amphetamines. You know, they've been banned from the clubhouse. That gives you a little boost, especially, you know, I don't buy the no amphetamines because it's June. It's not August. But that's what they're pointing at. No steroids, no amphetamines, no hitters, no really good young hitters. And that's not totally true, of course. Trout from the Angels, Harper from the Nationals. But you get the point. And a lot of people feel they're rushing these hitters to the major leagues before they're ready to hit curveballs, sliders, off-speed stuff. They're good fastball hitters. But then, and I would use Ike Davis as an example of that, Tommy Hudson threw him 6 curveballs in a row opening day. He hasn't recovered yet. So you're bringing up hitters before they're really ready to face the difficult pitchers. Again, say whatever you want about basketball, football, hockey, baseball, by far the hardest game to be great at. By far. You'll never see a guy walk out of high school and dominate in the major leagues like you saw in basketball before the college rule. In fact, Bryce Harper is a good example at 19. He's amazing. I mean, that's unbelievable what he's doing. But he's one in a million. So you never see a pitcher come out of high school and dominate in baseball. Remember David Clyde in the 70s, number one pick in the draft? They put him right in the major leagues. He was horrible. So understand the difficulties of playing baseball. And now we'll get quickly to the baseball scores. A couple of interesting games. The Mets sweep the Rays after the Dickey one-hitter, which is a one-hitter. Santana comes out yesterday, not very good. 5 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, but the Mets come back to win the game. Mets 9, Rays 6. Santana actually gets the win because after being down 3-2, the Mets came back with 4 in the fourth to take the lead. So Santana gets a win. Now, he's pitched 20 games in the last 5 years for the Mets, or however long he's been there, that he should have won. So here's one he didn't pitch well, but he does get the win. Santana now 4-3. Helixson takes the loss. He's 4-3. He actually gave up 8 earned in 3 2/3. So Mets 9, Rays 6. Mets sweep the Rays. Yankee fans jumping for joy, rooting for the Mets for once, if you can imagine, because the Yankees have gone right by the Rays in the AL East standings. The Mets now 35-29, back up to 6 games over. Tampa Bay 35-28. Obviously, 7 games over. Nguyen Heiss hit 2 home runs, his 4th and 5th of the year. And the much maligned Jason Bay hits his 4th home run of the year, although he's still only hitting 187. Both Matsui, the DH, 2-for-4, and Zobrist, 2-for-4, the only guys with more than, and Elliot Johnson, 2-for-4 as well, the 3 Tampa Bay Rays with 2 hits apiece. Mets sweep the Rays. The other interesting sweep, Royals sweep the Brewers. The Royals, you know, they just don't have the talent. It's you know, to me, they're a salary cap victim. I mean, they have some good players, but they just really don't. They're already 27-34. Hosmer hits a home run, his 8th of the year. The Royals beat the Brewers 4-3. For Milwaukee, Braun hits his 16th. Ramirez hits his 6th. and Collins gets the win in relief for Kansas City. He's 4-0. Ashford gets the loss. He's 1-3. Quickly, a couple of other scores. The Reds hammer the Indians 12-5. Arredondo gets the win. Tomlin takes the loss. Verlander gets the win as the Tigers beat the Cubs 5-3. Verlander now 6-4. Wood takes the loss. He's 0-3. Valverde with his 13th save. Athletics beat the Rockies 8-2. Parker gets the win. White gets the loss. The Orioles, unbelievable, 37-26. The Orioles hammer the Pirates 12-6. Hunter gets the win. He's 3-3. Bedard takes the loss. He's 4-7. Diamondbacks hammer the Rangers 11-3. Hudson gets the win. He's 3-1. Feldman takes the loss. He's 0-6. Phillies beat the Twins 6-1. Blanton gets the win. He's 6-6. Diamond takes the loss. He's 5-2. The Cardinals beat the White Sox 5-3. Westbrook gets the win. Floyd takes the loss. And Adam Dunn hits his league, major league tying lead, 22nd home run. This guy's already the comeback player of the year. Padres beat the Mariners 6-2. Volquez gets the win. He's 3-6. Ramirez takes the loss. He's 0-1. And finally, the Astros beat the Giants 6-3. Wandy Rodriguez gets the win. He's 6-4. Barry Zito takes the loss. He's 5-4. Quickly to the TV. The U.S. Open is on either ESPN or NBC virtually all day, starting now on ESPN. Major League Baseball this afternoon, MLB Network, Red Sox at the Chicago Cubs. Tonight, depending on where you are, the Yankees at the Nationals. That should be interesting. Or Colorado Rockies at the Detroit Tigers. That's at 7 p.m. Eastern, one of those two games in your area. This is the Steve Kallis Show, where it's SportsTalkNetwork.com.